It can feel very lonely to be in this moment, but I actually think we're all in this moment. And I think if you raise your hand and just be like, hey, how do I find community? I think it's going to appear for you. And you're going to find those communities where you're going to see like, oh, there are other folks who are frustrated like me. How are they navigating that?
This is Chan with The Plan, the podcast, a podcast providing career advice and easy, actionable steps for frustrated professionals, helping you overcome career challenges so you stop feeling confused and defeated and start feeling focused and confident in order to excel in your career. I'm your host, Max Chan. Now let's dive into the episode. Hey, Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Max. Thanks for having me.
How's the end of March treating you?
We keep on having fake spring. And so that's just the worst. It's like, it's warm. And then there's a snowstorm over the weekend. I'm hoping that we start to move out of that really soon. What about yourself?
Yes, same here. Like I have my winter tires on. I was getting my oil changed a few weeks ago. I was like, okay, this weather's pretty mild. It hasn't really snowed that hard. So I was considering it. And it was like, you know what? They say leave your tires on till end of April, early May. So I say, okay, fine, I'll wait. And then it snows, as you experienced this weekend. I live in Toronto, so it was pretty bad Friday night. It was definitely hard to get around. So I was like, okay, good thing I didn't go to my all seasons at that point.
Yeah, it was Sunday morning when I went to the car and I went to go open it. And like, I couldn't get the back door open because it iced over. I was like, no. I don't know why I do this.
First off, before we begin, again, thanks for coming on to my show. My show is focused on helping people advance in their careers, whatever their career goals are. And sometimes we have their setbacks. One big setback would be a layoff. As you're aware, there's about 41,000 tech layoffs so far this year. And you as a career strategist help professionals be able to rebound from this devastating loss to get back on their feet. But before we dive into this conversation, why don't you let my audience know a little bit more about what you do and your expertise in this field?
Absolutely. And Max, thanks so much for having me. I've been really enjoying the podcast. And what you talk about is so important because we all own our own career. What I do is career strategy and career coaching. The reason I talk about it as career strategy is sometimes you need a thought partner. Sometimes you need to really think through problems. Like there's a lot of ways to think through how you get support. And for me, this was, kind of based on a lot of pieces that got me here. Funny enough, career marketer, was at Facebook, was at Xbox, was in media television before that, made a pivot a few years ago into executive recruiting, kind of had this realization of like, marketing's not it. Something's it. I'm going to figure this out. Did recruiting through the last few years of the roller coaster of that market. But the one thing that was consistent across all of that time was people came to me to help them figure out what was next, to help them figure out how to position themselves, their story. And, come when the great layoffs in tech started in November of 2022, I started getting a lot of phone calls from friends or friends of friends just saying like, hey, I heard you have some thoughts. Can we talk? And it just said to me, like, there's an opportunity here. There's a place where I see my value. There's a place where I can give. And so I've been leaning into that really for the last year and a half, officially starting my business called Yes And Thinking, because my belief is sometimes you just have to say yes and figure out what's next. And in addition, I'm getting my certificate from the Cal Berkeley, which is really a lot of fun.
So in terms of like these people that reach out to you after getting laid off, they believe that they lost all their power, right? But you're all about like helping them take their power back. So can you describe more of that process and how you came up with it?
Yeah. I mean, really the whole idea is that so much of the way that work in corporate America works and success in your job is based upon performance reviews, is based upon systems in which you are working around, you're fitting into, you're doing what you can in order to hit the meets, not just be a meets all, but be exceeds or greatly exceeds, which is like the structure of Facebook would talk about promotion. Like everyone is gonna fit there. The problem is that, the folks who are getting laid off don't know how to think about what is next because they haven't necessarily looked for the job. Every job's really been handed to them. And not that it's not hard. It's not they didn't deserve it. They incredibly deserve it. But it was a different market. It wasn't, you'd put yourself out there, you'd look around, there'd be, one or two offers that would come your way, and then you'd say yes to it. You didn't have to do kind of deep thinking because the market hadn't overnight constricted in weird, unique ways. And so, you know, really, when I think about take your power, what I'm saying is for those folks who have been squeezed out, how do they start to think about what it is that like they're great at? Not what a performer's view told them they're great at, not what a manager said, but like, what do they like to do? What do they get value from?
So going back to the performance review part, some people are shocked. I think I spoke to a professional that worked at Meta Facebook, and he was saying that he had good reviews, good annual reviews a few years in a row, and he still got laid off. So he didn't understand. Are you able to shed some light in terms of like why are top performers getting laid off when they've been taught that being a good performer will increase your job security?
Because it's about some sort of goal or bottom line. It has nothing to do about the individual anymore. I mean, I think you're hitting on something that's actually like the hard truth we're hitting is the things that we were sold when we enter our jobs is not what the market looks like today. And that to me is one of those pieces, which is there was always this belief we were told that if you perform, if you exceed, if you're a high performer, you're going to move up, you're going to exceed, you're going to do all those pieces. That was like the unspoken pact we had with every company, right? And the reality is what we've learned with layoffs is like, no, there wasn't really a pact, which is the economy got tight, we had to make cuts. And so there you go. I don't know if you read this sometimes, I'm sure you do, you know, the amount of folks then got reached out to, especially in the engineering department, where they were like, wait, just kidding. We now did the work and analyzed it. It's like, come on, guys, you needed to, you know, be a little more thoughtful in your approach.
Yeah. So yeah, in terms of the layoffs, right? I heard stories that basically if you're ones that are chosen to get laid off, you're going to get an email saying like next steps and stuff, right? So everybody's aware about that email or that random HR meeting that is out of nowhere. Do you think like, in your opinion, there's a better way to do these layoffs? Because when you're laying off mass amounts of people at a time, it's very hard to make it personal. So then you have like a big Zoom meeting or an email. What's your thoughts on that? How can companies try to humanize the way that they lay off someone?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it's really about the accountability. When I think about the companies that have done it well, it's been the CEO who's come out and said, here are the mistakes that I made. Here are the decisions. Here's why we made the decisions. Here was the strategy. Here's why we're putting it out there. And I am putting myself out there accountable in a way. I think that's incredibly powerful because it essentially says to the employees that have been laid off, it wasn't your fault. Like, this sucks. It's happening to you. We're not belittling it. But you know this. You get laid off. You're like, what'd I do wrong? You know, I heard people say to me, like, who got laid off, like, oh, I was expecting it. It's like, but it wasn't about you. Like, it was about hitting numbers. And so I just think that if someone is asked to take accountability, that's a gift number one. I think the next one is really thinking about, like, what does the off-ramp look like? Really thinking about, like, you know, look, there is a point where I think as an employee, you have to accept if a company has made a change. There is a level where if the business has changed and a company has made a change, you know, I do think that's part of your responsibility. And part of the company's responsibility is to come meet you with the opportunity to exit with your head held high, whatever that looks like. So maybe it's a longer off ramp you want to go with doing work because being committed to the work to the end is really important, whether it's the relationships or whatnot. You know, you have the opportunity to say like, hey, what does that off ramp look like a little bit more? I understand I'll be off ramped. I want to be, say, the full time, or I want 3 weeks to transition, or I want to be gone tomorrow. Being given some leeway in that, I think, is really meaningful just because it allows you to figure out what's next. The last one is, I wish companies would start using better outplacement services. So many outplacement services just are pretty generic in what they offer. And I think like they're well-intentioned, but they're made for a market where you can say, senior executive looking for growth. Like, you got to be much more specific in your storytelling. So that'd be the other area I'd see that companies who do it well really invest in.
Yeah, like I heard like a lot of these outplacement services, like as part of your severance package, are not really that good. Like, it's very like outdated, out of touch strategies that don't really work.
Which is a bummer because I, you know, have the opportunity to work with people who have worked with these services who then, you know, have come to this realization where, you know, it was interesting. They learned things about themselves. Look, anytime you do any work that's about yourself, I think you're going to come out a better person. but you know, you're also dealing with services who don't necessarily understand your industry. And that's a challenge. I mean, especially when you work in tech or a lot of the high growth industries we've worked in, they, you know, there's just a language and there's a vernacular. The same way that, you know, I understand tech, I would never work with medical professionals because I don't speak that language. I don't think about it that way. And I think that's the thing that needs to get better about placement agencies. I have a whole rant about placement agencies that, you know, we can talk about later.
The other thing I want to touch upon before we wrap up the laid off conversation is about the taking it personal. Like, it's not personal, but people still take it personal. Like, how do you get the personal out of the situation that you're currently in?
I thought a lot about this, and I actually came up with this term called layoff Shiva. I don't know if you're familiar, but Shiva is the Jewish memorial. It's the essentially the 7 days after someone dies, you mourn. And when you mourn, you mourn, you know, you put black over the glass, you really feel the emotions. I think everyone has to do the same with a layoff. You got to give yourself that window to emote and to feel and to be angry and to be sad and be depressed and go through what you need to go through so that you can get to the other side and just move on. And I think what happens, you know, can talk from personal experience, which is like, you jump into the next thing so quickly, or you jump into the search, or you jump into everything. You don't have a minute to go like and breathe. You don't have a minute to really listen to yourself. And I just think that it's the thing I wish more and more people would do.
And speaking of like getting over the hump, like going to the other side, as you said, let's talk about being more proactive in your job search. So you've gotten laid off, you've gotten the emotional support, all the feelings are gone now, you're ready to get back in the job market. So how does one like determine their candidate fit in the market? The common strategy that everybody says is like, oh, just go on Indeed and apply as much as you can, a spray and pray approach. But obviously you have a more strategic approach. So tell us more about your strategy in terms of like helping your clients feel that candidate fit. So then they apply less, but they get more opportunities.
The point of view I really have is that no one's going to find their next job not through their network. It's just the way that it's working right now. Whether it's someone you know, whether it's someone you text with, whether it's a former colleague, a former boss, you're going to get that role through your network and through your connections that you're going to get there. And I think what folks need to think about is how do they want to activate that network? How do they want to bring it to life? I'll tell you examples of what I did, like when I was laid off 10 years ago. I got laid off and I immediately started to reach out to my network and be like, oh my God, I was laid off. What should I do? You don't set up anyone for success in that conversation. You're not helping yourself out because you're not setting up the person on the other end for success to deliver for you. And so I think part of the work you need to start thinking about is going like, okay, what is it I want to do? If I think about my career, not in my titles, not in my roles, but what were my accomplishments? Where were the places I gave value? Where are the places where I look back in my career and go, oh my goodness, I really liked when I did X, Y, or Z. Oh, when you put those together, that's actually more product ops than it is product management. I never saw that before. Oh, that's exactly what I should be going for. The point being is you have to spend some reflective time looking at that value exchange, because in the end, work is about a value exchange. You do work and you know you do value back into a company, gives it back to you. So that's a big area you need to really, really think through and have that point of view. Then to me, the next step is figuring out like, what does that look like right now? You know, I'll give you a real example. 3 years ago, when I left marketing, you know, one of the realizations I had was I was a brand marketer living in a growth marketer's world. And when I looked around, I was like, there's not really a place for the type of marketing that I do in the same way anymore. There's not as many roles. I was kind of at the end of what I wanted to do here. Well, let me just accept that, move on, and use that as a data point in terms of how I figure out what's next. And I think folks need to do more and more of that analysis to go, oh, I work in X, Y, or Z field, industry. How does that hit? Let me look through my network. Who's been getting jobs? Who hasn't been? Let me just get a sense for what the strength of that position feels like right then. And then the last thing I think folks need to then start thinking about is then start go networking. Say to your network, oh, I realized I should be doing product ops and I love climate tech. It's the thing that I've been working towards. I just took some classes to. Do you have any recommendations of someone I should speak to? You're more likely to get a yes to that if they have the contact than before. You're going to get the like, yeah, I'll keep you in mind. And that to me is the flip you need to get to. You need to be proactive in trying to suss out where opportunities are, who's connected to who, by having a point of view of what you want to do next, not just waiting for someone to tell you, you would be great at this.
So it's about doing some soul searching, career clarity first, and then you know what to ask your network because you have a goal in mind.
Yeah. And I don't think this is about long, laborious processes. Let's take a month here, then a month here, then a month here. This is all iterative. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, what I see where folks are really successful is they spend a little bit of time doing the work, thinking about it, coming up with a point of view. And in the work, they identify actually some core questions they have, which is like, would I like climate tech? Is product ops interesting? And then that says to them, oh, I should reach out to my network for people who either do that type of work or connected to that type of work. Let me meet those folks and learn what they do. And maybe that's a way I get the job. I really like, you know, basically learn into the job. And that, you know, could take a few days to figure out. So I think it really comes down to where someone is at, where someone has, you know, where someone's done the work, you know, where they are in their career to kind of have those point of views. And just really, how do you learn into it? Because I really think there are ways where you can just set yourself for success by making just small baby steps towards really learning and kind of unlocking the potential of your network.
Some people don't have a network to leverage. So what tends to happen is, for example, they've been working at this company for X amount of years. They haven't really like joined associations and stuff just to like fill up that network, so to speak. They get laid off and they don't really have any connections. So they're starting cold. So are they in trouble or what can they do? Like, does cold outreach on LinkedIn still work or what's your thoughts?
I think there's a couple layers we can talk to there before we get there. I think when someone's in that situation, my point of view is, you know, you got to get a little more thoughtful in terms of like, okay, let's really more define where your fit's going to be. Let's make sure that work feels a little more, you know, I like to say pointy, like so that it really feels like it's going to pierce something, not just kind of like be dull and like hit against a wall and get them a little further. And then, you know, the way that I would look at your network is not who you're connected to, but who your network is connected to. My experience is that if you have a really good why of why you want to talk to someone and you reach out to someone in your network who's connected to them, if the why is good, you're actually giving something of value. You're saying like, oh, I think this person's really interesting. I'd love to connect with them. They have insight into, you know, being an AE and X, Y, or Z product-led team, blah, 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 blah. There's still opportunities to look at your network in that way. That's always surprising. If you don't have that, there's nothing wrong with the cold LinkedIn, but tell a story of why you want to talk to this person. Don't make it about you. Make it about, I love that you have this experience. It's what I hope to be able to gain. I'd love to learn more about how you achieve da 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 da. Speak to their ego. But just sending that cold message, it doesn't work when you don't find a way to actually make it feel relevant.
Got it, right? Go back to the ego thing, right? Because these people, like, they're doing this job day in, day out, and no one really talks about, like, want to know more about them on the personal level. So if you can connect them in that way where you might hear their story and how they got to where they are, a lot of people would be appreciative of that if you do it the right way.
People love to tell their story. Well, that's why podcasts exist. Look where I am today. Like, people love to tell their story. And if you just find a way to show why it'll be a meaningful time spent, that you're not some person who hasn't done their homework or doesn't know why you want to talk to them, but you know that, like, no, here's why you'd be great, then it actually feels flattering because it just feels contextual.
Again, going to the network thing, you said, like, the market has changed so much now that networking is really the only way to get at least the job that you want compared to maybe even a few years ago where applying online will still work. Why is that the case? Is it because there's easy apply, there's AI application tools that makes it easy for people to just spam their resume? So recruiters are getting bombarded with a whole bunch of applications. Why is the shift now towards networking to get a job compared to before where networking is nice, but if I can apply online and get a job, like, I'd rather just do that. But now it's like you have no choice.
Yeah. And look, we're talking extremes here. There's something always, the truth is always in the middle and everything. The view I've seen and what I've heard is I have not heard of someone who has gotten a job in my network through applying. I've heard of people who found a job online, looked at that, applied online, and then in parallel, figured out a way in, figured out a way to work with it. So I wouldn't say, you know, it wasn't just the apply and then hope they liked my resume. They were much more engaged than that. I haven't heard of anyone do it the other way. The only place actually where I'll call myself a liar, engineers. God bless engineers. You know, they seem to still be able to cold apply and get calls from recruiters.
Yeah, because it's a very technical skill, right? Yeah.
It's a very technical skill. That's right. And just it's why I continually tell my children, like, let's do some coding classes. Come on, kids. Don't go into marketing. You're asking why. And why is this the case? Well, I mean, look, there's a couple of reasons. One is that recruiters got hit so significant in the layoffs. You just don't have the volume of recruiters you used to have. And so when you have a lower volume of recruiters, essentially the role of a recruiter does change how they need to look at it. ATSs are just full of bias. It's just how it works. Any system that parses out in that way is just full of bias. And so you just, who knows what's going to get through, what isn't going to get through, and how it's being worked out. And then really, I just look at it this way, is that in the end, a hiring manager only gets so many chances to hire now. They don't want to screw it up. And I think the more that they find candidates who can really connect with them in meaningful ways gives them confidence that they're not taking a risk at their hire.
To add to that, I don't know if you experienced this, but like, there's been a trend that there's more interview rounds compared to like pre-COVID. Because like before pre-COVID, usually interviews were always in person, except maybe the screening call. During COVID, it was all virtual. And now that has actually transitioned post-COVID, where there's still a lot of virtual interviews. So now it's like, okay, this candidate doesn't have to like come to the office. Let's just do more interviews and more rounds. Like, do you see that trend happening, where a lot of companies are spending way too much time interviewing and not giving the offer?
Yeah, they can. I mean, that's the trade-off. That's the pendulum we're in right now. 2 years ago, candidates had more power. Things were moving faster. Before that, you know, the pendulum goes back and forth. It's probably swung a little too far towards companies being able to move a little slower. You know, I've definitely heard stories of just folks, you know, going like, that was a slow roll in a way I wasn't expecting. And I just think that's kind of to be expected. I just hope the pendulum is starting to move back more towards the middle. Because, you know, the one thing I do think about some of those rounds and the way I think about interviewing in general is it's also the candidate's opportunity to interview the company. So if they're going to have so many rounds, there's fair places to go, hey, this is my seventh round. That's wonderful. That's also a lot. Why you guys so many? Is this how decisions are made? Help me understand what this means for culture. You know, how did you guys make decisions on the last one? Like, start figuring out, like, through that process, if you're going to be the fit for the company.
And going back to the hiring manager portion, where like they don't want to make a mistake, so to speak, one of the strategies that career coaches, job search experts recommend is you apply online, but then you try to find who the hiring manager is and try to reach out to them at the same time. Like, what's your thoughts on that? Does that work, or is that too invasive or aggressive?
The reason I'm making an expression like this is honestly, I think it depends a lot upon your style and personality. I think it depends a little bit about what you're asking for and what you're saying. And I think a lot of it is dependent on, I would say, how long the role's been posted for, how you're thinking about it. And so, you know, I just think if you can have a good story to tell, then you should do that. But if you're just reaching out to the hiring manager and just saying like, hi, I applied, like, that doesn't look good. And this is why I want to be careful about not being generic about it. This is that you have to stop and go like, what is it you're going to say? Because this is the person deciding if you're moving forward.
Yeah, 100%. Again, just going to continue with the networking conversation. In your opinion, do you believe like resumes are dead just because like just where the market shifted, where networking tends to be the way that you're going to get the role now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in general, LinkedIn is the tip of your spear. LinkedIn is where you're telling your first bit of your story. You know, I look at the resume as the, oh, you're interested enough. Oh, that's awesome. Let's go and read the book. And that's great. But that means that, you know, think about it like a marketing funnel. That means you're in like high intent phase that you want to read it. And when you're at high intent, give something with depths of a resume, of data, of your accomplishments, of really showing that, you know, how you can do it. when you want to get awareness up here, you don't want a dense book someone wants to read. You want to find a way to quickly tell your story in a way that's interesting to show how you'd be great on day one. And so for me, how do you tell that story on LinkedIn? How do you use the line, you know, the log line that sits underneath your name? How do you play around with the about section or even the experiences within your job experience? Like that's the first place you tell your story.
Does that mean that people have to start posting on LinkedIn? Because some people, again, like they don't like to do networking, and now they're, oh man, I have to post on LinkedIn too. Like, what's your thoughts on that?
I don't think, no. I wish that on no one, but you know, my worst enemies and myself. You know, I would say that, you know, be curious about your LinkedIn. If you see posts that are interesting, go like those posts. Or if there are people who are interesting, who down the road could be someone who you could see as a hiring manager, maybe start to follow them, maybe find ways to like a post or engage with something that's appropriate. Like, I think, how do you just become a little more present? But you don't have to start, you know, telling your story or creating a podcast or anything like that. Let's say that for the professionals, Max, come on.
Yeah, for sure, Chris. So with that being said, so what is your recommendations on telling a good story and building your personal brand on your LinkedIn? Like building that foundation where when you reach out to people, they actually want to talk to you because they read your profile. And the other way is obviously recruiters are searching you up. You insert the right keywords and then they find your profile and they like the brand that you've built and want to reach out. Like how does someone get started and craft a profile that's engaging?
So I really think there's like three things that you need to focus on. The first is you need to know your superpower. And part of it is then know your superpower so that you can then talk about it and you can describe it, because essentially you need to show where you're going to be best. The second one is then also really understanding communicating. Here's where my day one value is going to be for you. I am a salesperson, you know, with experience taking Series B to IPO, scaling these revenue. Day one, you're going to have a point of view on an operations, a system. By day 30, I'm going to scale it out. But the point being is that like having that point of view of where you're going to deliver that value. So you've talked about like where you're best, where day one value for them is going to be. And then I think, you know, the third piece starts to become, where is there just a track record of the value you've given? So are there three or four examples you can give of grew this, did that, like numbers, get numbers. Numbers are so important because they feel more real. And they also just show that like, oh, I'll talk about them. Like, let me prove them out. You got to do that all in under, you know, depending on the section, what, 30 words, 200 words, 80 words. And so that's the challenge. That's the hardest part about it, is that LinkedIn forces you to have to really figure out what's the story you want to tell, because there's only so much real estate you got to play with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like there's only so many characters. Yeah, because I write LinkedIn profiles for people, and I think the about section's 2,600 characters, headlines 220. I have a counter when I send them the Word document, because I can't go over, right? So there's only so much real estate.
But my problem with the 220, so I knew it was in the two something, but really once you get over 60, you get into that second line. A lot of people don't like that. And then it feels like it's too much. And just in the about section with the click of the more, you know, LinkedIn's never released data to what's the actual like scroll rate or click-through rate on the site. So if you apply digital media metrics, the story ain't good for anything that is hidden within the site that you have to expand in order to see. And so that's why I just think that it's actually, if we go full circle, why I'm so frustrated with some of the, you know, companies who help exit employees now, is there's so many LinkedIn pages that say senior executive with sales and partnership experience, trusted partner to C-suite. Okay, cool. Like you and a lot of other people, what is it you're great at? Honestly, that's what the market's gravitating towards, is those stories.
As the saying goes, facts tell, stories sell, right? So you have to have a good engaging story that make people want to connect with you.
That's right. That's right.
So you talked about like you were doing brand marketing before, but you were in a growth marketing world, and you know that you can only do so much in the brand marketing space. So you had to do something else. Obviously, with the emergence of AI, like there's a lot of news out there about a lot of jobs are going to be displaced. So in your opinion, with how the market is shifting for in terms of different skill sets, if someone has gone laid off or they're just not happy with their current job situation, what would be some opportunities that you think would be good for them to build their skills in so they'd be more marketable and in demand for the foreseeable future?
I mean, any class you can take in LLM or AI as a marketer, you should be taking right now. You know, look, I think with all folks, it's like, oh, do I embrace this? Do I embrace this? Do I embrace this? And it's, I dove in and it changes the way I work. I have my own podcast, the way I take a transcript and suddenly turn that into notes and bullets within minutes of a finished episode. The way I'm able to edit using an AI feature and pump out episodes within 12 hours where I couldn't do that before. The way that I'm able to record a session with a client and then hit a button and have that turn into notes that I then edit and send over to them, sending them notes. That's not common practice. And then even building that record. I mean, it's just like AI made all that happen. And those are all the places where I have added new value and it hasn't taken away. So that's why, first of all, I'm like, go figure out AI like we need to. I also think as marketers, AI is all about large language models. That's what we do for a living. So like, come on, friends, go out there. Displacement. Look, it's hard because, you know, AI is going to get better. I think there are places where it's going to be beyond entry level. And then there's a lot of places where it's still only going to be entry level. And I think it's going to be a matter about how do you train in order to leverage it to be smarter. You know, it's about how do you actually master the AI versus like trying to fight it or compete against it is more how I think about it. Look, we're all learning this future together. I think it's better to just say, dive in, figure it out and have fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's about evolving, right? You either adapt or die, as they say. So like if you're trying to fight it, you're just going to fight yourself out of the job faster compared to being able to adopt with it, use it, and then make you even more marketable because those are the skills that companies are looking for.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
To wrap our conversation, Chris, so let's say someone's laid off, they're frustrated, they've been in the job search for a few months now, the outplacement service that they got as part of their severance package is not really being that helpful. If someone's listening to this podcast right now, what would be something that they should take away in terms of a next step that could change the course of their job search?
There's a community of people out there who want to help. Whether it's, you know, services of like mine are great and wonderful. You know, we're here to partner. Look what's out there. But there's always such amazing groups that have popped up, especially around Never Search Alone, The Search Together. There are so many people who are also feeling the same way and are looking for community in other ways. And I guess the thing I would say is like, it can feel very lonely to be in this moment, but I actually think we're all in this moment. And I think if you raise your hand and just be like, hey, how do I find community? I think it's going to appear for you. And you're going to find those communities where you're going to see like, oh, there are other folks who are frustrated like me. How are they navigating that? Oh, there are other folks who just got laid off. Great, we'll partner together. Oh, there are other folks who are a year into this and realizing they have to do X, Y, or Z. That community is what matters. And so just lean into that is the thing that I, you know, really recommend to everyone.
I 100% agree. When I graduated university, I was job searching alone, right? I didn't really have many people to talk to. And it's definitely draining when you don't have a support group. But I think personally, like even if you don't work for the career coach, having someone that you can talk to give you emotional support in the job search will make things a lot easier and definitely make it less depressing.
You don't have to suffer through it. Sucks. It sucks. But it also can suck a little less, right? Like that's all you need. You know, the motto of my wife and I this year is the only way out is through. And so the way I look at it is like, this sucks right now, but like, it's what it has to be. Let's just get through it. And you know, if you can have someone to get through it with, you're just going to hopefully come through on the other side a little faster, a little less beaten up, a little more sure, because this is a moment of time we're all in and we're all going to get through this.
Absolutely. And to wrap up our conversation, Chris, if someone wants to reach out to you to learn more about what you do and how you can help them, what's the best way to do so?
Yeah, you can go to my website, yesandthinking.com. You can send me an email at chris@yesandthinking.com, or you can find me at LinkedIn, Chris Metter, you know, all the fun ways.
you've been in tech for a while, right? So do you think like the tech industry is still a good place to be in the next few years and beyond? What's your thoughts on that?
My thoughts is that there's no such thing as the tech industry anymore. I think that everything is tech now. And I think that's where the opportunity has gone, is that, you know, there's no company that doesn't have tech elements now as part of it. And, you know, I really think you're going to see this interesting renaissance, not just of startups, but also of companies that weren't innovative, now having the opportunity to innovate because they're able to hire people from companies like Facebook and Google and Snap and Twitter and all those places. So yeah, I mean, I think what will be the more tech vertical will always be great. But I just think tech's everywhere. And I think the more that you think about it that way, you see your skills apply to almost anything.
Sounds good. Again, I appreciate the time, Chris, and best of luck with your business.
Thanks so much, Max. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this content valuable, here's three ways I can help you achieve your career goals for free. First, subscribe to this podcast as I post 2 episodes a week. Number 2, leave a 5-star review as this helps build the credibility of the show so we can gain access to more influential people to interview and bring those lessons to you to help elevate your career. And number 3, connect with me on social media. There's a link in the show notes for you to click on that compiles all my active social media accounts, making it easy for you to find me and connect with me. Thank you again for listening, and until next time. We'll